Thank you all very much for joining us this afternoon. My name is Athena Misson-Foulé. I am the Outreach and Recruitment Manager for the Fulbright Scholar Program at the Institute of International Education. I've been with the Fulbright Program now for 17 years, and I have the distinct honor and privilege of sharing this time with you this afternoon to hear from such great speakers and experts related to opportunities for scholars with disabilities. We are being joined by our colleague at the National Clearinghouse on Disability and Exchange, Mobility, also known as Mobility International USA, Monica Malhotra. She is the program manager there. Joining us is also Michael Schwartz. He is a Fulbright Scholar alumnus to the United Kingdom, an associate professor of law, and the director of Disability Rights Clinic at Syracuse University. And last but not least is David Levin, the Senior Program Manager at the Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs at the U.S. Department of State, who is the sponsor of the Fulbright Program. So thank you all again for joining us. The presentation today will consist of a couple of slides with an overview of Fulbright Scholar opportunities and the program, a brief history. And then we'll pass the conversation along to Monica so she can talk a little bit more in depth about resources available for scholars with disabilities interested in going abroad to the program. And Michael will be sharing some of his experiences as a Fulbright Scholar to the UK. And the last 10 to 15 minutes or so will be specifically set aside for question and answer. And as questions may come up through this presentation and our discussion, please feel free at any time to enter those questions in the chat box, and we will be able to address them at that time. So a little bit of history about the Fulbright program. In partnership with 160 countries around the world, Fulbright offers passionate and accomplished faculty, administrators, artists, and journalists opportunities, unparalleled opportunities to go abroad to conduct research, study, or teach. And the program is celebrating its 75th anniversary actually next year. And as the flagship international educational and cultural exchange program of the United States government, we want to ensure that the people participating in these programs, the people being able to share their experiences and exchange ideas with communities abroad as well as when they return home are as representative as possible of what the United States has to offer as well to the world. So given that the mission is to foster mutual understanding between nations, advance knowledge across communities, and improve lives around the world, we want to make sure that we at the Institute of International Education are doing our best to ensure that as many different audiences and as many different disciplines, regions, specializations, and candidates know about our program, are applying for our program, as well as getting an opportunity to participate in it. I briefly mentioned in my introduction of David Levin that the Fulbright program is sponsored by the U.S. Department of State with funding provided by the U.S. government as well as foreign governments, and it's administered by the Institute of International Education, which is the nonprofit organization that is hosting this webinar today. So Fulbright by the numbers, when you look over the 75 years of the program's history, since 1946 to today, the program has given opportunities to over 390,000 people that we refer to as Fulbrighters. And for today's current snapshot, what the number of people participating on our awards total about 8,000 annually. So that's both outbound, U.S. students and scholars going abroad, as well as foreign nationals coming to the United States to study as well as conduct research. And the breakdown of that 8,000 roughly can be looked at in this order. The U.S. scholars and administrators, which is the lion's share of what we're going to be talking about today, actually it's exclusively what we're talking about today. We are looking for scholars, professionals, and administrators to go abroad to teach, conduct research in your area of specialization overseas for the 2021 2022 academic year. So the deadline is September 15th, 2020, for the following academic year, 2021-2022. As we send out approximately 800 U.S. scholars and professionals, we also receive about 900 visiting scholars to the United States every year. We also have a large component of the program is comprised of students. 2,200 U.S. students go abroad, and about 4,000 foreign students are coming to the United States to complete graduate study. And we also have a cohort of language teaching assistantships coming to the United States. It's from overseas that total about 400 annually. And I'd like to give David Levin a moment now to introduce this slide as well as discuss this statement from the State Department. David?
Athena, thank you very much, and thank you all for tuning in. As we go about administering the program that we do, and Athena's right, we're nearing our 75th anniversary next year, we talk about the program being elite but not elitist, and we take that seriously. And by that, we mean that we're reaching out to diverse audiences, and you can see from this slide, we're reaching trying to reach a cross-section of people. We make a point about saying that, you know, wherever you might see yourself in terms of sort of this diversity panoply, we want you to consider applying for Fulbright. And we take this seriously. This is part of what's called the State Department's Diversity Statement. And you can see the range of people that we're talking about in terms of diverse audiences. And as part of that, we're certainly reaching out to people with disabilities. And we make a point about saying that when we talk about disability, we talk about it as part of diversity. It's not separate from it. It's part of it. We've been talking about diversity and disability within Fulbright for many years. In fact, I had a chance to meet a gentleman named Davis Duty, who we think is the first recorded, at least, American full body with a disability, went to the UK in 1957, now an 80-year-old lawyer in Arkansas. But we're proud of our legacy in the sense of including people with disabilities in the program, and it's clearly expanded year by year. And we think that's important. And one of the best ways we've done that is back in 1995, we issued a grant to an organization called Mobility International USA, based in Eugene, Oregon, to run something called the National Clearinghouse on Disability and Exchange. And the idea of the clearinghouse really has two functions. One is to encourage people with disabilities to apply for exchange programs. And it could be virtually any kind of program, any kind of disability. Americans going abroad, people coming to the United States. It might be a federal program, might be a private program, might be a college program, might be a high school program, you name it. We think that a person with a disability should consider that as an option. And we make a point about saying that because certainly with programs that we sponsor through the State Department, we will provide a reasonable accommodation case by case, which we hope translates into the notion that says someone with a disability can virtually go on any kind of a program. And I mentioned the Clearinghouse is a phenomenal resource that helps make that happen. So in addition to supporting or working with people with disabilities who are going on exchange, the Clearinghouse also serves as an organization that provides guidance and technical assistance to all the exchange providers and helping them do a better job of increasing the number of people with disabilities in their programs and ensuring that they have successful experiences. So the Clearinghouse has been sponsored by the State Department for now starting a 26th year and really plays an important role in helping Fulbright, but really helping all of our exchange programs do a better job of disability and exchange management. So I'm happy to now turn the microphone over to Monica Malhotra, who's the managing director at the Clearinghouse. And Monica can tell you more about the Clearinghouse activities and its services to people with disabilities in general, and also how that would relate to you as a Fulbright Scholar candidate. Monica.
Thank you so much, David. Again, this is Monica Malhotra. I'm the program manager for the National Clearinghouse on Disability and Exchange, and really excited to be able to share more information about the project with you. Thank you, Athena, for the invitation and for putting this webinar together, which I think is critical that it's offered by Fulbright every single year. And our team at the Clearinghouse always looks forward to sharing more information with different audiences. And so as David was mentioning, the mission of the Clearinghouse is to increase the participation of people with disabilities in international exchange programs. And this is supporting Americans with disabilities as well as international participants with disabilities who are interested in coming to the U.S. for study, for research, whatever the exchange program might be. And so we are talking about international exchange as studying, research, volunteer programs, teaching, so the whole portfolio of exchange programs. And we do this in a number of ways, and it works twofold, as David was explaining. First, in working directly with the disability community to share information about scholarship opportunities such as the Fulbright program, and many other State Department sponsored programs, as well as disability-specific resources on how to plan for an inclusive international exchange program. This could be a person's first time traveling abroad, let alone studying or participating in an exchange program abroad. So there's sometimes a lot of technical things and questions that the participant would be helpful to review, and those are the types of resources we have. And the second part is working with exchange organizations, actually organizations as a whole, and supporting a person with a disability planning for an inclusive international exchange program. And under the umbrella of organizations, this could be organizations like IIE that administer international exchange programs, universities, community colleges, disability service offices, as well as disability organizations, to also have disability organizations share the information about people with disabilities participating in all types of exchange programs. We offer free technical assistance to both, you know, people with disabilities as well as organizations or anyone who's involved in planning an inclusive exchange program. As David mentioned, the project has been sponsored for over 25 years by the State Department's Bureau of Educational and Cultural Affairs and has been administered by Mobility International USA for that full time. Pictured here, you'll see the Clearinghouse team in an alleyway in Eugene, Oregon, with a colorful mural painted behind us. Next slide.
I think... Did you share your screen, Monica?
No, not yet. There's the slide. Yep.
Okay, there it goes.
So just going to talk about funding reasonable accommodations. This is a question that many people will have on how that's coordinated and how that's worked out with Fulbright Program and IIE. First and most importantly, the State Department and cooperating agency staff are committed to providing reasonable accommodations and are committed, as David was sharing, to diversity, which includes disability. And that's showcased in, you know, we hope with webinars such as this, focusing on applicants with disabilities to encourage people with disabilities to apply for the programs and letting people know that people with disabilities have been applying, have been participating in these programs for years. Disability-related accommodations are intended to remove barriers and to provide equal access to the program. And there's been a number of people with diverse disabilities, including people who are blind, who are wheelchair users, and who are deaf, who have participated in Fulbright. Disability-related accommodations can look different country to country, person to person, so it's very important to start planning as early as possible with the program staff at Fulbright. If programs have or accommodations have costs associated with it, some do not, but if they do, that does not come out of the participant's stipend that they receive from Fulbright. So this is outside of the cost that will be coordinated and arranged with the program partners directly. Next slide. And just to go over more in depth about the types of resources the Clearinghouse provides, I mentioned free technical advice, so organizations and individuals can email the Clearinghouse at clearinghouse@myusa.org and ask any questions you have. We provide a lot of in-depth research into country-specific information, disability-specific information, and in a moment I'm going to show you our website so you can kind of look more at the types of resources we provide. We share a lot of online stories, and that's kind of where the Clearinghouse term comes from. We're literally a clearinghouse of information. We share disability travel tips. We have social media campaigns. We have a number of publications, podcasts, webinars. And so these are the various type of information that we share. We've got tip sheets, best practices from organizations that are really working to build inclusive exchange programs, and a number of alumni stories. And a picture here is a screenshot of our website, and I'm going to share my screen so I can take you directly there and just kind of give you a brief tour. And can one person tell me that they can see our website?
Yes, it is live.
Great. Perfect. So this is our website, and Mobility International USA does a lot of international work, and the mission of MyUSA is to advance disability rights and leadership globally. So I encourage you to review the website to learn more about MyUSA's global work as well as local work. I did want to take you directly to the Clearinghouse resources so you can know exactly that's more relevant to what we're speaking about today. So in the top right corner, there's a box that says Search Our Resources. So I'm going to click on that. And this takes you to our resource library that is has a filtered search field. So you can filter by tip sheets, these personal alumni stories. There's over 200 best practices that are really focused on international exchange providers. So if there's anybody on the webinar or watching the webinar that are international exchange staff looking to build more inclusive programs, and this is a great place for you to review. Our books and journals, podcasts, you can filter by our resources that have ASL videos in it. We've got international sign, filter by disability. For physical disability, there's over 100 resources. Deaf and hard of hearing, 67. Blind and low vision resources, 82. And then there's a number of different audiences that would come to our website. Are you a U.S. traveler looking to go abroad or an international traveler abroad wanting to come to the U.S. Or an exchange professional, maybe a youth looking to participate in exchange programs or a parent. And then going back down to exchange types, so as I mentioned earlier, there's research programs, volunteer, youth programs, language courses, so you can also filter by exchange programs. I'm almost out of breath by explaining all the resources, but we have filter by origin and destination. You know, where are you interested in going? Where are you coming from? To read more about stories of people who've done it, possibly with a similar disability, to learn from their experiences. And one more, I'm going to take you back to our homepage. And under Access, there's Americans going abroad, coming to the U.S., and for exchange professionals. So I'm just going to click on for exchange professionals. And down in the middle, it's how to begin. And there's a number of resources here on
I recognize
Dr.
that,
Short.
Man.
That's right. This is somebody you're going to be hearing from in just a minute. So there's what disability questions to ask, recruitment tips, faculty-led programs, changing policies. So there's a number of resources here that's really relevant to exchange professionals coordinating exchange programs. And I'm going to stop my share now. And I want to welcome Dr. Schwartz, who was just pictured in that page, to share more about his experience as a Fulbrighter and his background. And Michael has been an incredible partner with MyUSA on participating in our global programs, as well as partnering with the Clearinghouse on our 2018 Joining Hands Symposium and presenting on some of his background, too. So thank you, Michael, if you want to take it away.
Hello, everybody. First of all, thank you to Athena for having me here. It's a pleasure to participate in this form of discussion. So I'm a lawyer and professor of law. I applied for the Fulbright for the United Kingdom. And I studied in Belfast, Queen's University in Belfast. And I think it was the spring semester of 2015. And it was honestly the happiest time of my life. I actually loved the experience. And the experience of studying in a big university in Northern Ireland. And my topic was deaf access to healthcare in Northern Ireland. And I interviewed about 30 people. Some of them were deaf, some of them were interpreters, and some of them were healthcare providers. And I'm just interested in learning more about how they all communicated with each other. So Fulbright really gave me an award to study there. It was for 6 months, from January until June of 2015. And like I said before, I was thrilled. I had a great time for several reasons. First of all, the topic was very interesting. I got to meet some wonderful people, and I learned so much about their different perspectives and their ideas and just their feelings about the situation involving healthcare for deaf people. And I've met some wonderful colleagues in Queen's University in Belfast and also the community in Northern Ireland. And I've been visiting Northern Ireland since 1983. And this trip was in 2015 was building on my roots in Northern Ireland. And also the proximity to Europe was irresistible. I just took an EasyJet or Ryanair and just very cheap flights to all over Europe and various different countries. I know during spring break for my daughter, who was with me, it was my wife, my daughter, and I. And my daughter was enrolled in school while we were there in a local school, mixed with Protestants and Catholics. And when they had a break, the three of us flew off to Europe and just dipped our toes in the water of each different countries. We visited 15 countries and 30 different cities. And the everyday routine was awesome. We had a beautiful apartment in a very nice section of town. So we were able to walk every day to work at Queen's University. And all in all, it was a fantastic experience. And I published an article based on my research. So all in all, I encourage everyone to apply and to take the Fulbright. It is worth it 1,000 times over. So, okay, I'll open it up for questioning. So over to you, Athena.
Thank you, Michael, for sharing that with us. We always love to hear how excited and passionate our alumni are about their experiences in that country.
So the
remaining time that we have now is specifically dedicated to question and answers. And it doesn't look like anyone has included any questions for consideration, but I do have a list of a few things that I would like us to definitely cover since we have such great experience and expertise in the room about this. But first, I would like to say, I know that this is on the mind of a lot of our applicants and candidates, but can David and Monica perhaps address this question? When a person with disabilities is interested in applying for the Fulbright program, should they disclose this in their application?
So this is David. Thank you for that, Athena. Let me start. So it's really up to you as an individual where you would disclose the fact that you have a disability. The one thing I would say is please be assured that your disability is not something that we consider in terms of whether you're going to receive the grant or not. Even if you tell us in your project statement that you have a disability, because that relates to the kind of work perhaps that you might do as a Fulbrighter, that's fine. We still make a point about saying that that should not affect your selection or non-selection as a Fulbrighter. So some people may tell us that in their application statement. Others, it might come up perhaps when they're doing the medical. Perhaps it might come up during an orientation. And I suspect we even have people perhaps with non-apparent disabilities who have a disability but in fact didn't have a bigger need to tell us about that. But I guess the other point I would make is if you have a disability, and I think that Monica mentioned this, if you have a disability, please advise us early on that, should you be receiving a grant or maybe even at the point that you've been offered a grant, that you'd like to consult with us about reason combination, because that could take some time. There's a number of players involved in that process. We look at this case by case. We want to clearly work with you to make sure that we can provide you with reasonable accommodations. And in terms of Fulbright, we actually have a sort of a process in place because we've seen an increase in the number of people with disabilities in our program. So I just want to give you that as a message that says, please let us know if that's your situation, and we're delighted to work with you. Monica.
Thanks, David, and I don't have too much to add to that, and, it's an obvious concern for many people at what stage would they disclose if they do need to plan for accommodations, and it will be different for each individual, and I think the message through these webinars and through the State Department's diversity statement is sending the message that they want people with disabilities to apply to the Fulbright program. They want diverse individuals to apply for the Fulbright program. And it's up to you when that comes up if you do want to disclose. Many people might share it in their application if it's very connected to their research that they're going to do abroad and to their personal experience with their disability. And sometimes it might come after, as David mentioned, to the medical forms if accommodations are needed. And as I mentioned earlier when I was speaking, is that sometimes people may not know what types of accommodations they might need in a new setting, in a new environment. And, you know, we encourage individuals to contact our clearinghouse to kind of start looking at those questions and start preparing. And the clearinghouse is, as I mentioned, works with organizations and individuals with disabilities, but we don't share information. So if an individual would contact the clearinghouse for more personal guidance, then that information is not relayed to IIE or to the State Department, and that's up to the individual of when they would want to share that. So kind of, you know, before maybe applying, or if you're considering it and you've got questions that the clearinghouse can maybe provide more guidance and information, then that might help the individual decide when and if they disclose their disability.
Thank you both. And you actually addressed another question that has come up in the Q&A box, but can you talk a little bit about that intersection of once somebody applies for a Fulbright, at what point then do they get directly in contact with Nobility International USA? But as you just discussed, it sounds like they're free to reach out to you at any time to get a sense of that simultaneously, Monica?
Yeah, yeah, at any time. Any and every time. Before a person applies for a program, during their application phase, once they're accepted, during a program, you know, a person might be in country and have questions of reaching out to local disability organizations or resources. After the program, at any point, the clearinghouse is available to provide guidance and information and support.
Thank you. And we have a question that was sent to us before the actual webinar started, so I can happy to bring this up now. Can a part-time schedule for research be approved if it is an accommodation? How much of that would need to be discussed with a host prior to submission, and would the need for a modified schedule be addressed in the proposed work or separate document? How could the application be competitive if the proposed work for the time period is one half to three quarters the normal expected work of other applicants? And is it possible to avoid bias during this review? Okay, so there's several questions there, but what I would advise you to do is to, if you are applying to a country that does require that letter of invitation or does encourage you to have that host in place, yes, I think it is to your benefit to be as forthcoming and clear with what you are interested in proposing to do, as well as what their requirements and interests are from the kind of project that you're proposing. So I would definitely have an honest discussion with them about what you're hoping to accomplish on your Fulbright grant. But in terms of this idea of, like, will there be a bias during that review, that if anything, it would be almost a consideration in favor of you, because, again, you are adding to the points of view that will be represented within the program at any given time, and depending on where the part of the world that you're going to as well. Like, there's obviously a richness there that we would want to be able to capture and enhance. So I would work very closely with your host institution to make sure that you're on the same page, and then build a project around something that meets exactly the needs and the goals that you have for what you'd like to accomplish on your Fulbright, as well as what the host is seeking as well in terms of hosting you. Do you have anything to add to that, Michael? Just in terms of, like, when you reached out to your hosts in the UK, were there concerns in terms of, you know, the kind of project that you're doing matching what they were doing, or being any less or more of a consideration for your grant experience?
I didn't have a problem with Queens, and the UK, the Fulbright Committee, we all discussed my accommodation needs, and they were very open and very transparent in the process. I disclosed my deafness on my application, and I believe that I was open and very transparent. I always assume people won't discriminate, especially Fulbright. And I worked out a deal with all three of us. It was my university, Syracuse University, Queen's University in Belfast, and the Fulbright Committee in the United Kingdom. And we all agreed to divide it to three ways. We all agreed to divide it three ways. And the cost for interpreting services for 6 months came to $30,000. So Syracuse, Queens, and Fulbright committee all divided it amongst themselves. So it worked very well.
Fantastic. Glad to hear that. Another question that we received, and this one might be best answered by you, Monica. Are accommodations based on ADA or the guidelines in the host country, or possibly a mix of both?
This is Monica. It is a mix of both, since resources in different countries will not be the same as the U.S., and so, you know, really understanding what the needs are of the individual in a different context. There are international laws such as the UNCRPD in many countries as guidance, but there are many resources that are available in the U.S. such as different assistive technology or even infrastructure that's not available in different countries. And so a little bit, there's a lot more planning that needs to be done to really understand the individual's needs. For instance, housing. If there's a person who's a wheelchair user that's going abroad, and maybe we have to look more at housing, different housing needs to make sure there's accessibility in the housing coordination, and looking at the campus, the university, to coordinate with the host school for access in different buildings. And again, that's where the ADA, you know, is not going to be set in those different countries, but taking it from the U.S. side of understanding that if you're a wheelchair user, then we need to find accessible housing for the participant. And that goes with other disabilities as well. And so it's starting with the person's needs and then looking, understanding the country's resources to see how that can fit into the country, and really evaluating, you know, it's going to be a different experience for the person for what they receive in the U.S., so it is important to understand that, but then really evaluating what are those definite needs for access in a different country. And Michael, do you, Michael actually led a program overseas, I believe it was to Japan. But do you want to share anything of how you kind of coordinated that for your students abroad?
Yeah, so the Japan trip was through... just give me 1 second. Okay. So the Japan trip was through SU Abroad. That's the university's study abroad program. So I had several students. Some were from California University as well. And most of them were from Syracuse University. And several were wheelchair users. We had one blind student. And I think we had one hard of hearing person as well. So I went... I was very clear with Syracuse University that that we needed to upgrade. And we really needed to step up to the challenge of accommodating these various students in Japan. And we worked with CIEE, the Commission of International. He's just asking if the interpreter is following him. Okay, the interpreters can only see him on a very small screen, so it's just difficult to see Michael at the moment. So I really pushed for accommodations in the university with CIEE, and they cooperated with me. And I asked the students what they needed. And they told me, and I turned around and I went to the university and I said, this is what we need. And the university worked with me and it went very well.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. And yes, just so that you know, the original question that Monica was referring to.
Yeah, sure. Sorry about the problem.
No, not at all. Not at all. We're all learning in this new Zoom world that we're in. So another question we had was in regards to specialized medical treatments. So is there a way to ensure that they would be able, that applicants and grantees would be able to get specialized treatments for conditions in countries where they might not be as common, or access to these substances that they can take regularly, or that they do take regularly, that may not be usually accessible in the countries that they're interested in? I think this is another question for David and Monica.
So I can say in general, this is the point about so talking with you early on, because you want to determine what your needs would be, and then we would ask the appropriate people questions about the availability of certain medicines and certain procedures you may need done or services. You know, we would work with the U.S. Embassy. We would work with the State Department doctors there, asking the questions. We've done this before, certainly, and there's no one answer. In some cases, it's been clear that the medicines, for example, that someone has needed were available. In other cases, they were not available, or there was some regulation about not letting them perhaps transfer across borders. In that case, people got special permission to take perhaps what they needed with them as a supply, 3 months, 6 months, whatever the case might be, with them, so then they didn't need to worry about trying to obtain something sort of in the middle of the grant program. I don't know that what we've done with Fulbright is necessarily any different than how anyone would address this going on any kind of exchange program.
Yeah, this is Monica. We have a resource on tips for traveling with medication abroad, because just as David said, there is some planning that needs to be done and research to ensure that your medication is allowed in the country that you're going to, and how are you going to get refills. I'm just going to put it in the chat box, the resource. And we've had some students travel to countries where their medication, for instance, for ADHD wasn't allowed, so they have to talk to their provider in the U.S. ahead of time to learn about different and alternative medications that that they tried in the U.S. that was allowed in Japan that they were going to. And so kind of looking at that backup plan and giving time to see if that new medication was going to be okay for them before they actually tried it in the country, and switching in the country can be challenging for many reasons. So just kind of on that resource is just tips and considerations if you are planning on traveling with medication abroad.
Thank you for that, Monica. And thank you for the link. So just to draw everyone's attention to that, again, Monica added a link. It's the tip sheet regarding medications into the chat box. So please definitely access that as you are able. I had another question that I wanted to pose in our last, 7 minutes or so that we have here. We get a lot of questions from candidates about why they should apply. Michael, could you talk a little bit more about what motivated you to apply for this opportunity to become a Fulbrighter?
Sure. And he's just asking if the interpreter can see him well. Yes. Thank you. So as I said before, I have been an ongoing visitor over many years to Ireland. And in my visits, I've learned just a little bit about deaf people's frustrations and the different challenges in getting appropriate health care. So when I had the opportunity and it came up for me to go on the Fulbright, I thought of merging those two together. My love for Northern Ireland and my interest in ongoing with the Fulbright and studying that particular issue in Northern Ireland. And I have friends in other countries, and I have professional connections with several lawyers in countries near Ireland. So all in all, it was an easy decision for me. And the United Kingdom is one of the hardest most challenging countries to get a Fulbright, because English-speaking countries, everyone wants to study there in an English-speaking country. So preparing for the competitive environment was interesting.
If you had any advice to offer anyone in the presentation today who might start, who is thinking about applying for a Fulbright grant, what's one piece of advice you would give them?
Me? I would tell them, go for the joy.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Figure out where you want to study. Know that your Fulbright experience will be awesome. Just figure out where and why that you want to go, and the particular country, and then the rest will be easy.
Thank you. Great words of advice. So we have one sort of last slide and send-off discussion to leave you with before we log off for this discussion now. But a few ways to continue to stay connected with everybody on this call and with the Fulbright program is to visit us at cias2.org to plug into our monthly newsletters and resources that we send our candidates month after month. Again, the deadline is September 15th for the 2021-2022 academic year, so we look forward to receiving inquiries and applications for that. Always feel free to contact us at any time at scholars@iie.org. And Monica, is there an email address that you would like to provide for Mayusa?
Yep, our website is mayusa.org, and you can contact us at clearinghouse@mayusa.org, and I'll put that in the chat box.
Fantastic. And yes, please visit us on our website. Again, these are active links on this PowerPoint, and this will be uploaded as an archive shortly. But always keep in mind that of the 800 or so opportunities that we have available. We are in 135 countries. So to what Michael was saying, definitely find that joy that would make sense for what you want to do for the time that is given to you abroad. David, any closing statements or remarks to share before we end our chat?
I would hope that we've sort of piqued people's enthusiasm, and I think Michael did a great job of demonstrating that the program is open and that it's a great opportunity for people, regardless of their background, regardless of perhaps their disability. We talk about Fulbrighters for life, and the point we make is that you're a Fulbrighter for the time that you've got your Fulbright grant, but we also hope that you're engaged with the Fulbright community for 50 years when you return home. And that's maybe a bonus with Fulbright, is that you are then part of a global network, and next year we'll have more than 400,000 Fulbright alumni who've had the same kind of experience that you've had as a Fulbrighter, understand it like you do, and are happy to engage with you in all sorts of ways. I think Fulbright is unique perhaps in that respect, another reason why you might want to consider Fulbright. So, as I said, I hope that this piques your interest, and you know, we look forward to your application.
Monica, any closing remarks? Thank you very much, David.
Yeah, no, I hope I got to explain more about our resources at the Clearinghouse and apply. That is a big point, I think, of this webinar, and to let you know that we're here to provide support along the way at any stage. So look at our website. There's a lot of Fulbright stories from people who have applied for the U.S. Student Program and U.S. Scholar Program and a number of others. So start exploring the possibilities and apply. And thanks again, Athena.
Thank you. And Michael, last jewels of wisdom to share?
Yeah, I would just say it's worth looking into, and it's worth applying for, and it's worth getting, and it's worth going, and it's worth coming back richer with the knowledge and understanding of your country going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Really appreciate that. I hope that, and thank you all for taking the time to share your information with everybody on the call and by sharing your expertise and experiences. I thought it was very insightful to hear other people's takes on the Fulbright program, because I know I am very much in a tunnel when it comes to my discussion on all things related to Fulbright, but I agree this is a very important discussion to have, and I love hearing it directly from the people who work most closely with this cause and issue. So thank you again to our speakers for taking the time to chat with us today, and thank you all to those of you who have participated and have logged in to hear from us. We look forward to hearing from you in the coming months, if not the coming years, and finding a Fulbright that works for you and is able to continue this mission of promoting mutual understanding across cultures and countries in the coming years. Thank you all very much. Have a wonderful rest of your afternoon. Bye now.